This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
Hello and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Big Brother Australia VIP. I'm your host, Sarah Carradine, podcasting from the unceded lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. And I'm here with VIP, that's vital, interesting podcaster, Amy Chan. How are you, Amy?
Hi, Sarah. I'm coming to you from Wiradjuri land. I'm sitting in my real, not my fake Louis Vuitton mini chair, in my mini room with my mini cup of coffee, ready to talk about everything that happened this week.
Watch your head. So this is going to be a spoiler-filled recap of the first week of Big Brother Australia VIP. So if you're planning to watch and you haven't done that yet, you should hop off and come and join us later.
Yep, that's right. We're going to talk about all the tea that was spilt this week.
And it was scalding hot, some was lukewarm, and some, I'm afraid, was quite stone cold. So let's get into it. What are your first thoughts on the season overall before we get into the play-by-play?
I have to say I was actually pleasantly surprised at how fun it was. I was concerned based on the fact that the last time I watched Big Brother was a million years ago, that it was going to be a bit boring. A lot of the VIPs were people that I didn't necessarily feel that interested in. But once I started watching, it was really fun. Having some pretty vain and over-the-top personalities is fun to watch. It's so bad that it's good. It's that kind of, you know, really out there, outlandish kind of situations that they throw them into that are just hilarious to watch. And I've really enjoyed it. What about you?
Oh, look, I have to say I agree with you. I was surprised at how good it was or how bad good it was or how good bad it was. The house itself is really fascinating, very, very overly coloured. It's like a kindergartner's got into a box of crayons after a binge on red cordial. But I love all the sweeping shots down lit hallways, and I don't know quite where I am, and particularly in that running task, I thought, where are we and where are we going? And I'm here for all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fashion, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yes.
That's been one of the great things about it, is having these celebrities in there. They're not just sort of walking around in their tracky dacks. They are, some of them, in full ball gown. And it's just hilarious and fascinating and great to watch.
I am here for the fashions on the field. I have a few notables and a best on ground, but we can get to that after we do our marvellous chronology. I think the other thing that surprised me too was, yes, some of these VIPs are vain and self-centred, but they also know they are. And I think that's part of the key of what makes it refreshing. And that might be a particularly Australian characteristic as well. I may be vain, but I know I am in my real Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, totally. It's all about leaning into all the kind of worst stereotypes of being a spoilt celebrity, and also some of the worst stereotypes about reality TV. And that's actually what makes it really fun, is that it doesn't take itself too seriously. It is what it is. It's not pretending that this is a, for instance, real social experiment where people are actually going to get married and live together forever after. It's very clear about what its position is and what it's supposed to be. And I think that that is actually a great way to go back to the roots of what reality TV was in the very first place, which is just big personalities all jammed together in crazy situations and just watching to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that happens is a series of rollers roll up to our wonderful Sonia at the Big Brothers Hotel. I love the Rolls Royces. My grandfather had a Rolls Royce, a Silver Cloud, and I do remember as a child riding in that back seat with the rosewood pull-down trays. And I think that's one of the reasons I like air travel so much, is that little pull-down tray reminds me of being a girl in the back of a Rolls Royce. That Rolls Royce is long gone, I can tell you. I do not come from a wealthy family. He was a bit of a grifter. That's a story for another day. It was certainly a Rolls Royce he couldn't afford, but we did have it. And so when I saw the rollers rolling up to Sonia in her beautiful gold lamé, I was very excited.
Yeah, it was a fun way to do the red carpet, actually, with the, you know, the fake paparazzi on the side there taking the pictures. Lots of the VIPs were strutting their way as if it was a proper fashion show red carpet. So that was really fun. And how great to get a backstory for every person that entered the house.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good way to introduce them because, look, not everybody's going to know who these people are. So we get that little quick note of them. Look, dishonourable mention to almost all the men in terms of what they decided to wear on this red carpet with the fake paparazzi. However, some of the gowns were really notable and we'll talk about them in our fashions on the field. I like this opening of Big Brother VIP. Who wins? You decide. So I think they're really pushing that viewer engagement. I'm sure people will vote who haven't seen the show, but it's also a great invitation to watch the show. I liked particularly Ellie Gonsalves. I did put my chip on her in our pre-season. She describes herself as a massive goofball. Not the first thing I'd think of when I look at her, but I think she is a person with quite a healthy self-knowledge. She knows the industry she's in and she knows the product that she is pitching, which is herself as a model. We did find out later that she was never taken on by any modelling agency when she first started, and she now has a very big career and a very big following. So I was glad to see my winner pick doing so well. Who impressed you in this first walk along the carpet?
Yeah, I loved Omarosa as well. Omi. I don't know if she's called Omi anywhere else outside of Australia. I've never heard that before. Have you?
No, never.
Okay. So that must be one of our, you know, Aussie slangs that we've bestowed upon her. I just love the way Omi really leans into the whole idea that this is entertainment. She comes in the massive black feather ball gown. You know, she likes to strut, make poses. She makes these really kind of loud declarations. She's here to take Big Brother head on. She's got the red lippy. Yeah, I loved it. I think Omarosa definitely always makes a splash, and that's exactly what I expected her to do when she arrived.
She was one of the ones that surprised me, actually. She played very seriously and very hard in the US Celebrity Big Brother. But here she seemed to have a much lighter touch. I think, look, she knew that she had an op in Caitlyn Jenner. So she was quite light and flirtatious and girly with all the girls, which surprised me. And I thought she is a very smart woman, and I was pleased to have her for as long as we did have her. Spoiler.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think shout out also to Sonia, who really has fit really well in with this cast. I think the way she strikes up the banter with them is friendly, it's light. We get a little bit of information, but it's not too much. She certainly doesn't make it all about her, and she looks fabulous every time we see her. I mean, every outfit, stunning.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely high distinction for her corseter. Whoever is making her waist cinches deserves an absolute medal because she does look incredible. So the first thing that we find out is that Omarosa, Ellie and Imogen all have the same birthday, which is fun. Big Brother calls them to the diary room and we start the game in this fashion. Luke declaring himself to be the people's champ. Dane is in beige, as I say. The boys really dishonourable mention to them. And Caitlyn Jenner rolling up last in a roller of her own, looking wonderful. And really, I've never seen Sonia fangirl so hard over someone before.
Sonia was certainly very, very starstruck by Caitlin. And Caitlin seems to won everybody over very quickly. I think that's been quite surprising to see how quickly she has managed to kind of take on that role of the mother figure. Everybody is kind of turning to her for advice. They're respectful of her, and that's been really fascinating, actually, how she's so quickly become beloved by everybody in the house.
Yeah, I'm enjoying her flannel pyjamas. And, yes, she has surprised me as well, and I'm sure we'll get more into that. She certainly understands that there need to be alliances. I don't know that she is playing super strategically, but I think she might be thinking of it in terms of teams, and she is assembling a team around her. So she'll be interesting to watch as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that whole thing of both the American women coming in and quite deliberately aligning themselves with the girls was quite interesting from a strategic standpoint in terms of the social politics of how the hotel is sort of working itself out. I think that's been really key to putting Ellie in the position of power that she's in. But they've done it in a really fun and seemingly in a way that doesn't necessarily look strategic. So, for instance, the fact that Omi, Ellie and Imogen, who Omi has been calling Imogen, the fact that the three of them share that same birthday on February 5th, they kind of use that to banter and form a bit of a bond. And when they went to the diary room, then they started talking about shoe cam and comparing shoes, and I love your outfit and I love your hair. I think that's been a very clever way of making it really lighthearted and fun, but they're still actually forming very strong emotional bonds with the other girls, and that has been very interesting to watch play out.
Yes, I mean, Ellie later says that she is almost looking forward to Omarosa being evicted because she needs the closet space. I think Omarosa brought an enormous wardrobe, and we do get to see quite a lot of it in the brief time that she's with us.
I think they all brought enormous wardrobes. I sort of lost count already of how many cowboy hats Imogen has with her. Seems like a new one every time she's on camera.
It's a hat and a pair of glasses and some combination of leggings, jacket, fringing, top. She's cowboy, alien rock star, I think, a lot of the time. It's a very interesting style, and I'm loving watching that.
I actually also really love how she kind of leans, as you were saying earlier, everyone's sort of leaning into their caricatures. I love that she leans into the fact that her main claim to fame is being the ex of Kyle Sanderlands. When she arrives on the red carpet, she rocks up and says that she's had two shots of tequila and she's got no strategy. And I love that about her. She's just hilarious to watch.
She's good value, as they say, and apparently the value is about $20,000 compared to the hundreds of thousands the Americans are being paid, although there is some dispute over their wages. It's fun to compare the value that Channel 7 is putting on to them.
Mm.
So we start with these beginnings of relationships, feeling out of teams, who knows who likes who knows who is. Caitlin doesn't know who anybody is. Omarosa clearly has a dossier on every single one of the Australian celebrities. She seems to know at least something about all of them. And so we see how it is that she is so successful as a political operative, because she would no more walk into Big Brother's hotel unprepared than fly to the moon. In fact, she might fly to the moon. Who knows? She might go there as well. So I wonder if that made a difference in the relationships, do you think?
I don't know. I definitely think that Caitlin seemed to form a very strong bond as well, not knowing anyone except Omarosa. So I'm not sure if having the dossier on them really helped Omarosa in the end anyway, but I think she definitely was going in there very strategically trying to form these bonds and these strong playing alliances, whereas maybe it feels like Caitlin is going in there and just naturally wanting to form wanting to be sort of a team leader in a way, as opposed to necessarily thinking of it in a gameplay sort of setting. I'm not sure if I'm making sense.
I think that makes sense. I think Caitlin does think of teams as opposed to alliances, and although they're similar, I think there is a difference there. Of course, the first thing that happens is three of them get whisked away.
Oh, yes. Can we take a step back, actually? The relationship that really fascinates me, and they try to really spit out throughout the time that they can, is this pre-existing relationship between Omi and Caitlin.
Yes.
So essentially, Omarosa was former White House consultant employee. Caitlin is now running for governorship of California with the endorsement of Donald Trump. And so because of that, even though they don't know each other personally, they both have this kind of group of mutual connections, and each feels threatened by the other. Caitlin feels that she has things to spill about Omarosa and that Omarosa is a backstabber, and Omarosa feels that Caitlin is dishing dirt about her that isn't true. So it's kind of, that's quite interesting. From the very beginning when they first see each other, Omarosa says, "I'm glad you're here," and Caitlin just says, "I know." And that's it, doesn't reciprocate. And I think that's quite interesting all the way through, that kind of undercurrent of animosity and rivalry that's there between the two of them. But they never actually speak out in person to each other, but it is a kind of running theme through these three episodes.
Do you think Omarosa would have done better to have approached Caitlin and offered some kind of alliance? You know, they're going to go for the Americans. I mean, Caitlin even says it, vote out the Americans first. I don't know that she would have received much joy from Caitlin. It does seem slightly more weighted on Caitlin's side than on Omarosa's. I think Omarosa was in a very difficult position, having someone blinkeredly aiming and gunning for her right from the start. I think that would make it very difficult.
But Omarosa didn't help herself either. She very much wants to play up the Trump card. She basically was not seen talking about much else except Trump and her 15-year-long working relationship with him and how important she was to him and spilling all the tea on various shenanigans inside the White House. So she very much wanted to kind of lean into that claim to fame. So I think maybe if she had put it behind her and tried to focus on other aspects of her personality, or if they had shown us that, maybe it would have been maybe Caitlin wouldn't have so much sway. But the fact that Omarosa herself also wanted to use Trump as sort of her claim to notoriety, I think didn't help the situation.
Yes, I think that's quite insightful. They're both one overtly and one covertly using their relationship with Trump. I think Caitlin is trying to tell her more celebrity stories, and that might be why she's winning more friends in the House with the more Hollywood-style gossip than the political gossip. I think it's sort of slightly intriguing to hear one thing about Donald Trump, but not 10 things, whereas I think you can hear 20 things about the goings-on in Hollywood and find that sort of interesting when you're in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, that definitely makes sense.
So Big Brother has a luxury penthouse, according to Big Brother. And like the fools they are, they believe him. They do start to disbelieve him as the week goes on, but in this first flush, they're all very excited about the prospect of being in the penthouse. Three lucky VIPs will pick the correct key card and be whisked up to a penthouse. And so it is Caitlin and Luke and Imogen who pick the cards, who go to an elevator. They enter the elevator. But oh no, Amy, what happens?
Well, the elevator apparently appears to break down. There's a little shaking and the lights are flickering and Imogen is screaming and Luke is laughing. Luke, who hilariously has brought a teeny tiny little cabin size frozen suitcase, is laughing and laughing, and they end up trapped between two floors. So they have to climb out of the elevator and they find themselves in this mini half room which is apparently stuck between two floors, and everything in there is miniature. The beds are half size, so if they lie in the bed, their legs are hanging out. Little champagne bottles are teeny tiny. When breakfast comes the next day, they get quail egg. It's hilarious, and I just loved this whole section of them in the teeny tiny room.
It was completely unexpected from production for me anyway, and I thought it was absolutely delightful. And given that Caitlin and Luke are both tall, I mean, Imogen's not tall, trying to fit into this room for 3 days, was it, they were in there? It was visually funny, and it also is a way to see how these relationships get formed. While Imogen complained quite a bit and said she felt claustrophobic, I felt that generally they were all in fairly good spirits, a sort of can-do, sort of camping esprit de corps. And in fact, when there was the chance for one person to be freed from the half room, Caitlin declared she would not go because she wouldn't leave her team behind. And I think that, as we were saying before, says a lot about her attitude to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they actually formed quite a strong bond, and there was some camaraderie there, particularly when they were talking about essentially Caitlin's sex change and that whole process of being born the wrong gender in your own mind. That was really kind of interesting. You could see that she really moved both Luke and Imogen, and, you know, they sort of found a different understanding of what it might be like to be trans or to have gender dysphoria. So I thought that was really, really interesting to see them in this kind of ridiculous situation, sitting at these tiny tables, hunched over, tiny glasses, and yet talking about something so profound and something that we often don't see discussed on mainstream primetime free-to-air TV. So that was really fascinating. I almost wonder with Imogen whether her way of reacting to things is always just to say something kind of outlandish and negative, but really she's actually quite a team player, quite easygoing. She did complain about feeling claustrophobic, but then when she wasn't chosen to leave, she seemed to be fine with it. And I've noticed that over the last three episodes that she kind of will come out and say these things that sound very negative, like, oh, I wish Omni would leave so I could have more closet space. But then she's actually still very kind and positive and not nasty about anything. So I feel like that's almost like her default personality is to say these kind of negative things, but then she actually is quite accepting of the circumstances.
Yeah, I think she's what you might call a good chick.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Can we talk about the people who did not go to the half room?
Yes,
let's talk about that. Do we think that the bedroom door was actually broken and there was actually no heating? What was the whole purpose of that?
I immediately thought it wasn't true because, I mean, given that the elevator didn't actually go anywhere, and you could see that because the elevator doors were opening and closing slightly, and then they went out the back of the elevator to a different place. So I assumed that the no heating and the bedroom door being locked were shenanigans on the part of Big Brother, but then the heating was fixed and the door was open. So I don't know what effect it actually had. Perhaps to force them all to stay in the lounge room and talk to each other. I don't know. I was puzzled by that.
Yeah, it was a strange mechanic to put in there if it wasn't true. Why not just say three of you have to leave to go to the penthouse? And, you know, why all this talk about? And there were certainly a lot of comments about how cold it was when they all first arrived. I think it's also interesting, Jess is in a puffer jacket all the time. Lots of the other VIPs are in, you know, bra tops and midriffs, and she's always got a puffer jacket on, which makes me think it must not be actually that warm in the house.
I think it's probably fairly cold, and she might be one of those people that feels the cold. I thought when the heating wasn't on that they were going to do like a day or even 2 days of it being very cold to put them under pressure straight away, but it seemed quite a brief period. But as you say, Jess continues to feel the cold and wrap herself up.
One of the things that I found interesting about Big Brother is that it's quite different from some of the other more strategic reality shows in the sense that if you typically pluck three players at the very beginning of the game and put them somewhere else, remove them from the main group, that would typically have quite a negative effect on your ability to bond with all the other players that you've never met before. But it appeared to make not one iota of difference. The fact that they were gone did not seem to disadvantage the three of them at all. They slotted right back in. No, they didn't even show anybody reacting when they magically appeared one morning in their beds. And it was like it had never happened. So that was quite odd.
Yes, I mean, that was the first thing I thought when they were all hoping to get the penthouse pass. I was thinking, no, you don't want the penthouse pass because you don't want to be removed from the game at this crucial beginning stage. But as you say, it doesn't actually seem to have made a difference at all. We do get the first challenge, which was hanging on to a big award while fans blew at you.
But before the challenge, we had another pointless mechanic, which was the breakfast buffet.
I had literally wiped that from my mind. That was all the listeners, the watchers, the viewers, that's what they're called. The Channel 7 viewers were not happy with this mechanic. Do you want to talk about it?
So essentially the Big Brother called each one of the VIPs into the diary room to ask them to order their fantasy breakfast. What would they like to have for breakfast? You can order anything you want. So they all set about putting together their lists of all the things that they wanted to eat. Big Brother delivered the breakfast on a big buffet table out in the backyard. The VIPs were sitting in the lounge watching this being delivered on the TV. And then a giant garbage truck backed in and flipped the table upside down and tipped all that food into the garbage truck and drove away. Huge waste of food.
Huge waste of food. But there's a couple of things here. One of them is, why didn't anybody pick up the food that was on the ground?
I think the fact that there are cameras there might have something to do with that.
I would say that there were a few of them who, had there not been cameras, would have. And it's fresh food. It's just been tipped onto the ground. It's still good, isn't it?
Well, and the ground was clean. I think at that stage they hadn't even been outside yet, so it was completely clean. But the other thing is, it's unclear how much they were starving anyway. I mean, then once this sequence is over, they're all seen eating breakfast. So at this point in time, it's very unclear, are they actually hungry? They've only slept the night there. This is not Survivor where you're out on the edge of extinction, you know, with one jar of peanut butter between 20 people. There really was no reason why they should be starving.
I mean, they certainly complained throughout this week about we're starving, we don't have enough food, but I think what they were lacking was a variety of food. There's certainly plenty of food, constantly eating, snacking. There was a bechamel sauce made at some point. I mean, sucks to be you if you don't like tuna. So I think there was plenty of food, just not plenty of variety. And the breakfast buffet did look pretty amazing. I mean, they were ordering coffee, they were ordering shakes, they were ordering bacon, eggs, toast, everything under the sun. And it would have been nice to have, and it was shocking to have it flipped over, but I wonder why. I mean, this is a repeat of the chipping of the luxury items from last season, where everyone was allowed to go into the diary room and ask for a luxury item. The luxury items were revealed, and then each person who'd asked for a thing had to go out and put it into a wood chipper. This made more sense last season because it was as if, and in fact, I think Big Brother overtly said, I'm in charge, you don't get anything for free. And I think that had more effect, whereas here it was order some food, oh, you can't have it. You have to have tuna on cracker instead. So it was a bit puzzling, and certainly there was a reaction about the massive waste of food. So do you think this was a bit tone deaf on Channel 7's part?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one of the things about the show that's a little bit of a negative. Although it is fun to lean into the kind of trashy reality TV archetypes, I think the fact that we are in a pandemic, this was filmed when more than half the country was in hard lockdown. People had not left their house, not been to school, not been to work in months. There are some people who will never get their jobs back and will be impoverished by this pandemic. To then have food in particular just wasted like that, I think was pretty awful and pretty tone deaf to watch. And then I think this is also then carries on in the next couple of episodes where we see these celebrities complaining, I'm so hungry, I'm so hungry. I can't be expected to live without eating Mexican every day, says Josh.
This is really,
you're not on the edge of extinction. You're not starving. There are people who really legitimately are starving. I feel like there was definitely an element of the food throughout this show is just showing an element of, yeah, as you say, being tone deaf. I can understand what they're trying to get at with it, but I think it really shows a lack of understanding and the fact that they're quite out of touch, the celebrities and the production, with how people might receive content that's like this.
Yes, I wonder if we can fix it. Perhaps, I mean, I know you can't bring people in because of quarantine at that point. Perhaps the crew could have sat down and eaten it in the sight of the VIPs, or even go a bit further and have some outside broadcast of, oh, Josh, here's your smoothie, and then have someone elsewhere drinking that smoothie. I think would have been the same slap in the face that perhaps BB was trying to give them without that massive waste.
Well, there could even have been a charity element. I really like that idea, Sarah. You could have had a truck come in from, say, someone like FoodShare, who then picks up all the food, and then they show footage of them delivering the food to families in need. That could have been amazing, and that would have really leaned into what this show is supposed to be, where the celebrities are not there necessarily to earn money. They're there to earn money for their charity. And that's probably something else I wanted to bring up with you is the fact that we don't really see a lot of mention of the celebrities' charities. It's very much focused on celebrities themselves. For instance, anyone who watched Celebrity Apprentice, the recent season that was on this year in Australia, there was a lot of talk about their charities throughout the season. Every time there was a player who was getting more of a story than other players, there would be a flashback, an origin story of their relationship with their charity. We don't see any of that in this. And so I think, as you say, if we change the mechanic up a little bit and made it so, you know, here's the food, we're going to donate it now to a charity. Similarly with, you guys are starving, we can bring in X, Y, and Z groceries, but how would you feel about sacrificing and donating that to FoodShare? I think that would have definitely come off much better.
Oh, yes, I like that idea. One of those wonderful Oz Harvest yellow vans could have come and everyone could have packed it up, or they could have just seen film of the food being delivered. I think that's a great idea. The same scarcity for the VIPs without wasting the food. Yes, as far as their charities go, I mean, I think we've heard Ellie mention Wildlife Warriors, but I have found out what all their charities are, and I absolutely have not heard a single one of them mention any of them apart from Ellie.
No, absolutely. In fact, even later on when we get to the shopping challenge, again, the celebrities seem very much focused on earning money for themselves to purchase food. They never once discuss earning money for their charity by winning the show. So there's a real discord there between them, their presence in the hotel, and then the charities they're supposed to be raising money for. There doesn't seem to be kind of any interest, I don't know if it's from the celebrities or from the way production has edited the show, in terms of promoting and marketing these charities. We're getting basically nothing about them at all.
That's interesting, actually. What if after the shopping challenge, which we'll get to, Big Brother had said you've earned whatever it is, it's in my notes somewhere, you've earned this much money which you can spend on shopping. However, if you all agree, Big Brother will donate this amount to each of your charities. I think that's a great idea. And then it brings up the dilemma. It brings up the decision. As we know from Survivor, it's always very interesting when players have a decision to make. And when it would have to be a group decision, we should be producers. This sounds fantastic.
It actually makes me wonder if the two evictees even had a charity, because even when they leave, that's not mentioned.
Yes.
So
Omarosa was going to donate her $100,000 had she won to Deaf Children Australia. It'd be interesting to know why she chose that particular charity. But as you say, nothing's said. I mean, even as an exit line would have been quite interesting. Oh, my charity had been Deaf Children Australia, and then perhaps a text on the screen telling you how you could donate if you so decided. And spoiler alert to our other evictee, Matt, his charity is Livin.
I don't know.
L-I-V-I-N.
Yeah, waste of opportunity. I would like to know what that is. I feel like, you know, there's probably some responsibility on the part of him and the show to tell us. But seems like that's not a priority for either of them.
Yeah.
So as you say, Sarah, the next major event that happens is we go into the Coliseum for the Clinging to the Pole Challenge. This is a stalwart on Survivor, but this has got a twist. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, the twist, well, normally clinging to a pole is good for small, light people. Generally, they're going to be women who are small and light. But there's an upper body strength component to it, which I think even the playing field somewhat. They had to cling to a great big award, life-size award, they said. I thought, well, no, it's not a life-size award because then it would be the size of an award. It's like an award that's bigger than a person. And they start on a larger platform, they climb up to a slightly smaller platform and then to an absolutely tiny platform. So this is going to advantage a smaller, lighter person with smaller feet. However, they have these huge fans that are blowing both air and water at the celebrities. And while some of them swayed backwards and forwards gently, Ellie was like a witch in a hurricane. She was here, there, everywhere. I thought she was going to turn right over. So that tried to even up that playing field a little bit, but to no avail because Ellie is indeed our victor.
Well, she was quite a challenge beast, Ellie. She really did show that you don't judge a book by its cover. Just because she looks small and tiny, you might think she's a model, so she might, you know, the stereotype of a model is that they're stupid. She's proving herself from this moment. This is where she really plants her stake in the ground to say, I'm here to play. I'm a leader. I'm strong. Don't underestimate me.
Yes, absolutely. And do you want to say what the winner gets, because it wasn't an elimination?
No, so we were looking at a non-elimination episode. Big Brother told the VIPs that they were going to get an advantage. I'm not sure that this wasn't an advantage. Essentially, what Ellie got to do was she got to choose which one of the three VIPs she was going to rescue from the miniature half room that we talked about earlier. So she could choose from Caitlin, Luke, or Imogen. And that was it. I didn't really see how this was any kind of an advantage. Omarosa said this about Caitlin, but I think this equally applies to Big Brother. That's some political BS. that was not an advantage. I did not really understand the point of that. It did make me think Omi was right to step off the pole, you know, under 10 minutes, because what was the point of hanging up there to rescue somebody else?
Yes.
Who then... we joined you, and later you both rescued the other two. I mean, shouldn't she have just cut straight to that? Shouldn't she have won the advantage to have the opportunity to be immune if she could rescue all three of them?
Oh,
it seemed to me there
was
two or three more steps in there that were unnecessary and didn't add anything to the game and actually made no sense at all.
Well, perhaps it was, you know, the idea was that it would compel then some social capital to be spent by whoever wins the challenge is going to leave two of them behind in the half room. And perhaps the idea is, oh, that could set up some animosity. But as soon as she was able to choose one person, it was obvious it was going to be Caitlin. And certainly within the room, I don't think there was any question that it was going to be Caitlin. And as you say, Imogen, you know, while she sort of weakly said, oh, yes, I'd like to get out of the room, I don't think for a moment either of them, either she or Luke, thought it wasn't going to be Caitlin. So, that was curious.
I suppose, to be fair, once Caitlin was first rescued and then they had to go on that mission to rescue the other two, I guess that did form a bond between them because now they are quite close. Ellie and Caitlin, and they're both now team leaders for when they go into the challenges. So I suppose that mechanic did have the effect of bringing those two closer. Rather than creating drama, it sort of intensified relationships. So I suppose that would be one of the reasons to do that.
I think, honestly, if you're not looking at it closely and desperately taking notes, it might just slide past you as a fun mechanic crawling through vents, although some eagle-eyed person on Twitter did notice that Ellie went into the vent feet first but came out of the vent head first.
So true. I didn't think of it either.
I thought, oh, gosh, people are fun, aren't they? Twitter's fun. Twitter and it's fun. So there was a little bit of architectural shenanigans, I think, going on there.
That would have been my worst nightmare. I don't have really any phobias, but one of my phobias is claustrophobia, being stuck in a little tunnel like that. Yeah, I would not have done it. I would have just said, put me up for elimination. It's not worth it. Caitlyn Jenner is like 72 years old. She couldn't even crawl through. Ellie had to push her feet. That just seemed like a nightmare to me.
Yes. I would have been all right. I did feel a bit anxious, particularly as I thought, well, Caitlin's very tall. I hope she gets around the corners. But our eagle-eyed friend on Twitter, of course, could have put our minds at rest by saying, well, actually, there were some shenanigans going on.
Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
Because Caitlin and Ellie were successful in their mission to break them out of their tiny room, they are both granted immunity.
What happens, Sarah, if they decide not to accept the mission? What happens if Ellie is claustrophobic like me and she says, there's no way, I'm not crawling in there? What happens? She's just has the potential to go up for elimination.
The consequence of not succeeding in the mission was automatic nomination.
Oh, automatic nomination as opposed to the possibility of being nominated.
Yes. So if they had not succeeded in their mission, they would have been automatically nominated. So I think that not starting the mission would count as not succeeding in the mission. So automatic nomination, I would say.
Right. Okay. One of the things I thought was disappointing is they went through all of that. It was quite fun. I was laughing and laughing. I had my kids with me. They were laughing. They thought it was hilarious. They finally all got back into bed. It looks like Luke crawled into someone else's bed because he crawled into a bed that was unmade. So they never showed us what happened when that someone else came to bed. And then there was sort of no reaction. They just appeared and nobody mentioned it.
I did think that Ellie and Caitlin was a buddy movie that I would pay to see. But, yes, I noticed that too. Luke crawled into a bed that was turned down mysteriously. But who knows? All they had to do was get them into the beds undetected.
The fact at the end of episode one, Omarosa was shown in, I think, in the lounge. doing something with her little book and, you know, a diary, and she was awake and you thought she was going to catch them. And then in episode two, no mention of that.
No mention. You wonder if that was at the same time or perhaps at a slightly different time. I think Josh had it off to the bathroom at one point as well. But you know, they can edit things to seem to be happening at the same time. I don't know if you know this.
Well, somebody was definitely out of bed because Luke had definitely crawled into someone else's bed, and I really would have loved to see that person coming back half asleep, trying to crawl into bed to find someone else already there.
I'm liking your version. So we get to episode two, everybody's back. Caitlin said she's bonded with the girls, as she refers to them, and that Thomas is an outsider, and she continues to be cautious about Omarosa. So a lot's happened in the couple of days that episode one covered, and we're setting up episode two really as this ramping up this rivalry between the two American women.
Yeah, absolutely. You're starting to now see sort of the politics play out of who's aligned with who, who's formed bonds with who, and why, and who's playing the game and who's not. Because we're about to go into this, into the group challenges. So we've now been told that Ellie and Caitlin, because of the mission that they successfully pulled off, rescuing the two in the mini room, are now going to be team captains, and they can choose their teams based on another strange and wacky mechanic that doesn't make any sense to me, which is Fitzy and Whipper, radio DJs, are going to interview them, and from this information they're supposed to glean who they want to be on their team. Please explain this to me, Sarah, because I enjoyed it, didn't understand the purpose of it, though. Other than to dish sound bites Channel 7 can use in promos.
Well, the thing is that the chair that they were sitting in, that each of the VIPs sat in to be interviewed, was beautifully lit and the sound was perfect and they could get a good shot. So I think you're right. I think this was also to glean promo clips for Channel 7. They all looked good to one extent or another. And it's this idea of, show us your real self. So here you are being interviewed via a screen by these two radio DJs. I must say, actually, I thought they were going to be fluffier, but they actually did go in. Whipper was very interesting. He was on The Celebrity Apprentice as well, and he impressed me there. And he impressed me here because it wasn't just the fluff and the softballs. They were going in, let's say, on some of the harder things to talk about. But I don't know if anything that any of the VIPs said wasn't already known by the public. Could you think of anything?
No, I think, as you say, this is part of the general tone deafness of the show, that they're, you know, heavily leaning on these international celebrities to bring the gossip. But it's gossip from things that happened quite a long time ago that have already been resolved and no one is talking about anymore. So, in that sense, it really was nothing that we hadn't heard before. And if somehow you had your head buried in the sand and you didn't know any of this, you would have learnt it because it was all shown in all the promos in the weeks leading up to the premiere. So it was all footage that we had seen before and had been used, and so there really wasn't anything revealed that was unknown.
Yes, and interestingly, watching Caitlin in the bathroom with the other women putting on her makeup and talking about, one of the women says to her, oh, Caitlin, who taught you how to do makeup? Did your daughters teach you how to do makeup? And Caitlin says she's been doing her makeup since she was 10 years old, 10 or 15 years old. She used to go and buy makeup magazines and she taught herself. Now, this to me is much more revelatory and much more interesting than anything they're going to say with the perfect lighting in the perfect chair being interviewed by Fitzy and Whipper. Good though they were with the interviews, because they're so, all of them are so used to sitting up on a chair and answering questions.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's kind of interesting, particularly the three Americans were definitely playing up, dropping the truth bombs about little sound bites that would be sort of headline grabbing. You know, Omi talks about Trump being obsessed with the KKK costumes, talking about, you know, say, making these bold statements like, I am extraordinary. I think that they certainly understood how to work the media and how to give the media sorts of content that they feel might sell. But in terms of really showing their true selves, I don't think any of that happened. In fact, if anything, I felt like a mask kind of went up. And that was particularly clear with Thomas. Fitzy and Whipple went quite hard on Thomas Markle, trying to lean into the fact that everything he was saying about Meghan didn't really make any sense. And if you didn't want to be in the public eye, why would you then be writing open letters to your sister, airing the dirty laundry, coming on reality TV shows? But again, I feel we didn't really get any glimpse into the real Thomas. We just got the wall came up and we just saw the polished PR performance that I guess he has learned from being in the public spotlight.
Yes, I think that's true. What the only thing that was interesting for me here is that Thomas had been talking about Meghan and Harry previously in conversations, and people were saying, oh, she doesn't talk to you, and seemed to be leaning to his side. It must be said that the other VIPs are watching these interviews, the conceit being that Ellie and Caitlin need to see these interviews to decide who they're going to have on their team. I think just feel the biceps would be your answer there as far as picking teams for challenges. But as Thomas said these things about Meghan and Harry, there was a bit of a turning of a tide of feeling in the VIPs watching. They were slightly more disapproving. They were glancing at each other. They were making slightly, not shocked, but off-put remarks about what he was saying. And I thought, perhaps this is where the turning of the tide against Thomas is happening. Because, again, it's mentioned that he's an outsider. He's on the outside. This might be partly his inability to be naturally finding his way in, but it also might be their reaction to seeing this interview, and they did go quite hard on him, and perhaps being off-put by his constant negativity.
Oh, yeah, very much. He came across as quite disingenuous, and I think that you're definitely right. That was the turning of the tide for him. He basically lost, I think, a lot of support amongst the celebrities after that, and I think they're kind of gunning for him because of that. But it seems like he's the only one who's in the house really for a very disingenuous reason, in a way that he wants to throw his sister under the bus. He's using this as a way to kind of stamp across her character and her person. And whether you agree with Meghan Markle and who she is or not, that's not cool with the VIPs. And I think we're definitely seeing that play out in the reason why he ends up getting nominated later on.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. He makes an extraordinary statement when Whipper is going in on him. He says he hopes he's on the show to show a different side of himself and that maybe she will call. I mean, this is a lack of self-knowledge that is astonishing even amongst celebrities.
It's actually such a circular argument. It's just, you know, I don't like her because she put our family in the spotlight and I didn't want to be in the spotlight, so now I'm going to reality TV to say all these bad things about her to try and mend the relationship. It's just circular talk that makes no sense at all, and is very it's very delusional. It'd almost be better to say, I think it would be probably more acceptable and something we could all maybe respect a bit more if you just said, you know what, I didn't want to be in the spotlight, but now I am, thanks to Meghan. I hate her guts, but I'm loving this newfound celebrity. You know, I always wanted to be famous, so I'm going to lean into that. Here I am, I'm famous. Mm-hmm. I'd kind of have more respect for that, I think, than trying to pretend like you're the good guy when clearly you're trying to exploit your sister's fame, yet at the same time you have nothing nice to say about her.
Yeah, oh, I agree. And in fact, nothing else to say at all. Well, certainly as far as we're shown, if it's not Meghan and Harry, we don't hear from Thomas at all.
We literally don't know anything about him, his age, where he lives, occupation, does he have kids? Nothing, nothing. A single thing.
No, it's quite odd. And he very much stands out from the other VIPs in that. So Caitlin and Ellie do choose their teams.
Oh, there are a couple of other little things I wanted to talk about that were brought up that I thought were interesting from the Fitzy and Whipper interviews. Imogene briefly mentions that she has joint disease. I would have loved to know more about that. I would have loved to know more about her and who she is, and have her show some vulnerability and something different from just constantly mentioning her ex, Kyle Sandilands. I think that would have been great. And I think the whole thing about Dane talking about losing his love of footy because of the death of his father, his then descent into gambling addiction, drug addiction, his drunken car crash, I thought that was all extremely moving and, you know, something that the show could have then leaned into and shown us a little bit more about him, showing that other side to himself, why loyalty is important to him, why honesty is important to him, why he chooses not to lie and play the game because of other demons in his past. That would have been really fascinating to see. So I'm glad we got a little bit of that. Would have liked to see a little bit more, but at least we got something.
Well, we may well see more next week in the fallout from Matt's eviction.
Yes. So in terms of the teams, then we've got two teams. We've got Ellie's team, which is called Hard Knocks, and Ellie chooses Jess, Bernie, Omi, Luke and Dane. And then we have Team Generator, obviously Caitlin's team, which has Tom, Imogene, Josh and Matt.
It's interesting that you give the team names because Big Brother consistently calls them Caitlin's team and Ellie's team, although Sonia does use the team names Generator and Hard Knocks, so I found that quite amusing.
I think the VIPs end up dropping Hard Knocks quite early on, but Generator is holding on. They keep using it amongst themselves.
So this is an interesting challenge. I actually like this challenge. I get very, this type of challenge, I get very tense while I'm watching it. It's basically one or two people have to push either side of a bar, or in this case a star. They're both pushing in the same direction and you're trying to overpower the muscles of your opponent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is always a fun challenge because so much of it is psychological. You can't just win this by brute strength. It's about understanding your opposition, what their weak points are, when the weak points are coming, when they're about to crack, and then exploiting that. So, yeah, it's it was very interesting to watch, and I thought that Caitlin, with her sporting background, has a very good sense of athletes and the way athletes' minds work, and do a really great job of coaching her team around reading the other team and the moments where they were about to crack and then telling them to push at the correct time.
Yes. And also in her selection of who would go up against who, which pairs to put together and so on. A pretty impressive win from them.
Yeah, absolutely. I have recently been watching, I don't know if you've seen this, Sarah, it's a documentary on Netflix called Untold, Caitlyn Jenner, and it does a whole thing about her win at the Olympics, breaking the world record and winning the decathlon, and what goes into that sport and why she was known as the greatest athlete in the world at that time. And what that meant and what kind of discipline and training and all that sort of stuff that had to go into that. That's a really, really good insight into, I think, a part of Caitlin that we don't really get to see very much of in Australia. I think if you're American, back in the day, Bruce was the number one athlete, one of the most well-known celebrity sports people. But here we only know Caitlin because of the association with the Kardashians. So if you wanted to get a bit of background about that, because I know the day they entered the house, I think was the 45th anniversary of Bruce winning the gold medal at the Olympics, that's a really good documentary, really entertaining and really, really interesting.
Yeah, she did mention that it was the 45th anniversary of her winning when she entered, and I thought that was, it is a significant moment, and I didn't know a lot about her career when she was competing at the Olympics, so that was Untold.
Yes.
Untold on Netflix.
Yep. So Team Generator wins the challenge. And so that means that Caitlin now gets to nominate which three people will be up for eviction. And she chooses to nominate Dane because he's a physical threat and he's very quiet. So I think she has not formed quite such a strong bond with him. She nominates Bernie because he's a really nice guy. He's consistently known throughout the house as the nice, easygoing guy. And he's got a lot of good alliances, so she thinks that he won't really be a threat to be evicted. And all this is done because who she really wants to target is her nemesis, Omarosa.
Yes, shock, shock, shock there. So Bernie's chosen very much as the person who is not going to receive any votes as far as she thinks. So now...
And then we should also point out that Caitlin is not allowed to vote.
Yeah.
Because she gets to nominate. She can't vote unless there is a tie, in which case then she will become the deciding vote.
Correct. But the nominees can vote, interestingly. I know this is something that might be not familiar to Big Brother US viewers, but the nominees themselves, because there are three of them, so it makes sense, they are allowed to vote.
How many nominees are there normally?
Two.
Okay.
Two in the US version, three in the Australian version. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is where we start to see where the lines are drawn. And with the exception of Omarosa, for this vote, it seems very gendered. Like it seems like the boys all initially all clumped together and the girls all initially all clumped together. And the only one who's sort of drifting between the two is Omarosa, who thinks she definitely has all the boys on side and is hoping she can get some of the girls. But when she tries to approach the girls to have some strat chat, she's pretty quickly rebuffed. And so then she realizes that she really needs to make sure she is aligning herself with the men.
Yes, the strat chat, both here and for the next eviction cycle, is quite curious and seems to consist almost entirely of people saying to other people, who are you thinking?
Yes, yes, yes. This feels to me very old school reality TV, you know, first generation reality TV of people not really thinking strategically, not even knowing that there are moves to be made.
Yes.
Just, who's my friend? Well, I'll just stick with my friend.
Yes. No thought of an overt chat of, if you save me, these are the things we can do. This is what I bring to the table. This is what I bring to the alliance. And the glaring exception to this inability to strategize is one Luke Tokey, king of the jungle, now king of the house, I would say.
Look, if we did not have Luke Tokey, I think... There would be problems with this elimination. It was lucky that we've got Luke creeping around the house trying to stir up trouble, because the rest of the VIPs seem to be oblivious to the fact that they need to be shaking things up. Luke is the one who wants to bring drama, and I love that about Luke. Luke is trying to essentially flip the alliances to turn the votes away from Omarosa and onto Dane. The reason why he wants to break up Dane is he can see straight away that Dane and Matt are a power couple. You need to break up the two football players. So Luke tries to bring across with him, now let me make sure I get this right, Bernie,
Thomas,
Omarosa, Thomas, and if the four of them vote together, they can then essentially vote out Dane.
Yes, so it'll be a 4-3-3. So he can see this really clearly. It's Dane because I think he can't imagine people voting for Bernie, and I think he's right there. And it's also Dane for his own reasons, because of breaking up the couple with Matt, as you say. And he, in fact, gets agreement from Omarosa, Thomas and Bernie, and with he himself, that's going to be four. And then we go to the eviction room. They have a special room for evictions. And here comes Sonia. And she starts asking questions.
Yeah, exactly. So what I quite like about the evictions is some people, mainly girls, get dressed up for them. So that's fun, watching the fashions again. But essentially, the whole time Sonia's talking, I found myself not really listening. So I was spending all the time trying to decipher what conversation was happening between Luke and Bernie, who were making eyes at each other and rolling eyes and opening their eyes wide and then squinting them and tipping their head to the side. And somehow out of all of that, Luke was able to decipher that Bernie was not going to flip. He was not going to vote out Dane. He was going to stay true to the boys, as he'd said. And so this was not the time for Luke to make his big move.
I felt that Bernie's change of heart came during questioning of Thomas. I don't know whether he thought Thomas wasn't going to come with them or whether he thought better of aligning with Thomas. But certainly, whichever way it went, both Bernie and Luke voted for Omarosa, leaving Omarosa and Thomas the only ones who voted for Dane. And with Omarosa gone, here's another reason that Thomas is out on a limb, because he was the only one voting in that fashion.
Yeah, Thomas, because he plays his cards so close to his chest, he's quite difficult to read. Like you say, he looks physically standoffish. He always looks like he's sort of standing slightly apart from the group. Even when Luke tries to have a strat tat with Bernie and Thomas, and he initially brings this idea of, hey, let's flip it, let's all turn our votes onto Dane, their mid-conversation, Thomas stands up and walks off. So sending very unclear signals about who he's aligned with, what his plans are, if there's any forethought going into what he's going to do and why. And I could see why, because of that, someone like Bernie, who is very transparent, it's all out there for you to see, would think, maybe I can't trust this guy because I just can't get a read on what he's thinking.
Well, it's true. They had to call him back for a handshake. I don't think that was enough. So Matt, Dane and Josh, the three boys, as it were, vote for Bernie. Thomas votes for Dane. Omarosa votes for Dane. And all the rest vote for Omarosa. She hasn't packed, which I think is such a boss move. I absolutely love it. She says she hasn't packed, it would take too long, and she's not going. This was what she said before the elimination ceremony. It may take a long time, but you are going. So off she goes.
She has the best parting words that I think I've ever heard, which is, I got to pee.
Yes, exactly. She certainly changes before she leaves, which is something we're not used to, because she was rather swept up in a gown, and then she gets into her athleisure to make her actual exit with her Louis Vuitton travelling trunk. On her way out, she finds an unplugged plug and is asked to plug it in, very oddly. She's about to leave. Big Brother says, just a moment, and we all think, she's not voted out after all. Something in her contract said that she had to stay a certain amount of time, or Big Brother production wanted to save the first evictee. But no, she has to plug a plug into another plug. And what does she generate?
She goes into a control room, and inside the control room she finds our old friend Danny from the last season of Big Brother Australia. And his first greeting to her, hilariously, as she walks in with all her luggage, is that a real LV or is it from Thailand? And she says, like a boss, I've never been to Thailand.
I know, it's so fantastic. And he doesn't know who she is, which I think she finds she can't really quite comprehend. It's a fantastic meeting of it's oil and water. It's, I won't say salt and vinegar because they go very nicely together. It's two people who shouldn't be together. But as we see in the next episode, they actually, once they start talking about strategy, and once it's about information sharing, they are immediately on the same page. So you think, oh, this would have been a really interesting alliance to see in the house, which we've been robbed of.
Yeah, it's a shame that we don't get that. I'm glad that we at least got, they were together for 2 hours in the room before she was finally actually evicted. So they at least got 2 hours for her to spill some of the goss. And I think that probably would have been quite important for the intruder, because it'd be quite difficult, I imagine, to get a read on everything that's happening just from watching, trying to watch those multiple screens without any kind of insider perspective. So having her sort of hand over to him and give him some of her perspective on what was going on, I think was very good for Danny's game.
Yes. I mean, I believe, and I could be wrong, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But I believe because of the unmentionable being sent back to England, Danny is her replacement. And the reason he's late into the house, of course, would have been his quarantining requirements. So they actually made a wonderful bouquet out of this slight problem by having him in the control room. This 2 hours with Omarosa is fantastic. I wanted more. And then him watching them all wandering about and begging them to push a big red button that is going to release him. And the VIPs spend much of the day standing directly beside the button, walking past the button, leaning next to the button, with Danny inside the control room, silently begging them to push the button. So we got some great humour. And I certainly think for a selection of a Big Brother player, Big Brother Australia player, Danny is absolutely the right person to go into this house. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. He has enough confidence and a big enough personality that he's not going to be starstruck by the VIPs that are in there. He can absolutely play at the same level as them, probably arguably a higher level of gameplay than they can. And he has as big a personality as they do. He's certainly, you know, not afraid to talk to the camera or put himself out there. And I think that that makes him a good candidate for being in this current cast with the people that we've got in there already. Yes. What I want to know, Sarah, is what would have happened if nobody had pressed the emergency button? What if everyone thought that was a real emergency button and yeah. So didn't press it? And would he be trapped in there for the whole season? Would he still be there?
Well, I think they'd have to edit out all reference to the button, and they'd have to have him, you know, appear mysteriously from the elevator doors with a puff of smoke. I'm sure they had a fallback, or just call Luke to the diary room and say, "Have you seen any buttons around that you feel like pushing?" I'm sure there would have been a way to get that open. But it is very funny, his frustration as he calls out to them to push the button.
Yes, exactly. And I think the fact that he even holds his own, all that footage of him inside the control room potentially could have been quite boring, but it wasn't. It was as entertaining as watching the rest of the show with all the other celebrities in it. So I think that goes to show that he really is a big enough personality that he can hold his own.
I couldn't agree more. So he has decided that he's going to align with Luke, which is just super smart. Absolutely. They're going to run this house. I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in the house, this is probably one of the only times we get a bit of insight into Imogen, where she has a little bit of a talk about why she broke up with Kyle Sanderlands and how he prioritised work and fame over kids. I'm not such a big fan of Kyle, so I have to say I have not really followed this story in the tabloids in the real time. Is this the first time, Sarah, do you know that we have heard her perspective on why they broke up?
Not the first time we've heard her perspective, but I think in this detail, as she has this kiki with Jess in the bathroom, which is a great place to have your girl talk, she says she had a dream about Kyle. So I think she's in quite a wistful mood, and Jess does ask what happened. And then she immediately says, oh, you don't have to say. And I think, oh, yeah, Jess, you know that there are cameras here and you're giving her an out. But Imogen's quite relaxed and happy to say it, I think. It's not really a knock on Kyle. She's not bagging him. She's just talking about, I mean, she was, I think, 21 when they first were together. And then there came a time when she wanted children and she just couldn't see him as the father of her children, because she felt that he would not be, that work would take priority over the children. So I thought it was a very, gosh, I don't want to say grown up because that sounds very patronising, but it was a very considered story. It was a moment between the two women. And you know, Imogen is perfectly aware that there are cameras there, but it felt like a sort of gentle putting out of her version of the story, whereas Kyle's has always been, you know, she was very young when we first got together, and then she grew up, and you know, she became a different person. So we'll leave that there. But I was very touched by Imogen, and I thought this is a very this is a very real thought to have when you want to have children and you look at the person that you're with and you think, is that the father of my children? And for her, it was no.
Yeah, and I think this is a very common thing for women in general, isn't it, that you start to head towards your 30s, just starting to think about fertility, children, you know, spending the rest of your life with someone, and to have to make that call to break away from the person that you've spent the best part of a decade with for most of your adult life is a very tough decision, and one that has to be made quite deliberately and quite carefully. And I think that was very much reflected in the way she talked about it, and something that I think many, many women out there can relate to, that you've been with somebody, they have been a good partner for that time in your life, but they're not going, they're not changing in the same direction as you. And so having to make that call about what is good for you and that it might not necessarily be with this partner can be a really difficult thing that many women have to deal with because of that fertility issue. So I definitely felt it was really nice to get that insight into how she was feeling about that.
Yes, and I've been feeling quite warm towards her, really, with her sort of her self-knowledge and her, as you say, she complains, but she seems very nice and kind, and other people react to her very warmly. She says, I'm not going to let someone else write my narrative for me. And while that's a slightly cliched thing to say, I think the sentiment behind it is absolutely genuine. So I think, you know, forget the interviews with Fitzy and Whipper, you know, opening stories. I think the mirror chat, the women's mirror chat, is revealing much more about these them as people.
Yeah, absolutely. All the best information is coming out of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do like Imogen a lot. I really love that whole section because we're now essentially heading into this shopping challenge. So the premise of this starts with all the celebrities are complaining they're starving, they're so hungry, there's not enough food, we're sick and tired of eating tuna. And then a few of them get a big tray full of food, which is completely edible and healthy and fine. They bring it into the diary room, and then Imogen starts talking about Greek yogurt is like off milk, I don't need apples, that's horse food. She is hilarious. I really, really enjoy these kind of outlandish statements that she makes. They're just so funny.
Yes, they are sick of the tuna and Vita Wheats. They want coffee. They haven't had coffee. They want tea. They want something else. So as you say, there's certainly plenty of food, but it's just not the food they want to eat. I mean, heaven's sake, Josh orders Mexican takeaways every night, he says. I don't know that you get that body by doing that, but we must take him at his word.
I don't know. I've got an 8-year-old in this house who is obsessed with Zambrero, and he eats Zambrero almost every day. So maybe it's possible, depending maybe. How much working out that Josh was doing.
Yes, exactly.
So this leads us to the shopping challenge. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was going to say exactly the same thing. We are on the same wavelength. Leads to the shopping challenge. This is, we've seen this before, a 24-hour challenge where there'll be an alarm and the housemates must all do something, you know, at any hour of the day or the night. So Big Brother Australia has used this challenge before. I was reading on Twitter people saying, oh, we've seen it before. I love it. I think it's absolutely hilarious that at any moment an alarm might go and you're compelled to rush and do something. You might get it and you might not get it. I think much hilarity for those of us watching. Almost all of them enjoyed it in one way or another, with one glaring exception.
Big Brother was really trolling Jess, wasn't he? That whole section where you got sort of a whole minute's worth of her in the bathroom, she's getting ready, she's going into the shower, and you see the shower door, then it zooms in on the shower door, and then the alarm goes. And then the fact that she announced to Big Brother, I am not getting up in the middle of the night, and so they deliberately had a camera zoomed in on her bed all night as, you know, midnight, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, all the other little celebrities are getting up and running, and she's not even turned over.
Yes. I was quite surprised in the night that the others did continue to get up. Surely that by the third or fourth time in the middle of the night, they knew she wasn't getting up. I think they wanted to show willing and be sportsmanlike. I mean, Luke and Bernie decided very cleverly that they would sleep in the living room because it's in the living room on the living room screen that tells the celebrities what area they have to rush to. So they're shouting, garden, pool, hallway, so that people don't have to rush in, find out and rush. So there was a lot of rushing. There was some piggybacking. There was hilarity. They have to rush and pose and have a photograph. And the person not rushing and posing is Jess.
Yes. Yeah, you're totally right. As soon as one person is not going to do it, there's no point in anyone doing it because they're not going to earn any money for all those times that Jess won't do it. But I suppose it's, I guess it's being a good sport in the sense that they understand this is a TV show. We don't want to watch a TV show of alarms going off and celebrities sleeping through it.
So, although a couple of shots would have been quite fun. Now, Jess does the most wonderful proactive attacking in the morning, knowing that she's slept through the alarms, knowing that she has cost them money because we didn't say, but for each time they make it to the designated place without the timer running out, they're going to get $20 towards their shopping budget. So Jess just wakes up and is in a foul mood and announces her foul mood and is foul. So if you feel, this is a good tip for anybody, if you feel that an entire house of celebrities is going to be angry with you, not sure how you got in that situation, but if you are in that situation and you feel they're all going to be angry with you, start with the foul mood yourself and then they can't get at you. This is quite clever, but I don't know if it's going to work. So they could have had $760. Had they got to up for each of the alarms and got to their poses, but they end up with $340. And this is, as we said earlier, this is a great time for Big Brother to say, you can have $340 towards your coffee and whatever, or I will donate $340 to each of your charities. And it has to be a group decision. That would have been quite fun.
Yeah, it's a shame they decided not to do that. But overall, I still thought the challenge, as you say, it was quite funny and it did make me laugh several times, so I enjoyed it.
Yes.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
The founder of Panasonic once said,
"We can lead more meaningful and constructive lives
through the pursuit of activities that will ensure
a better today than yesterday,
a better tomorrow than today."
Panasonic is committed to creating a greener,
more equitable future for everyone.
Explore Panasonic Green Impact
at na.panasonic.com/greenimpact.
So we are now going into the next challenge. And in between all of this, we get quite a lot of little interesting tidbits of information that help us get to know a little bit more about our different celebrities. So, for instance, I did not know that Ellie was actually, you know, one of the very first influencers in Australia. She had 1.3 million followers on Facebook in the days when there was no Instagram or Twitter. You could see Josh's head kind of explode at the thought of no Instagram or Twitter. But I thought that was really kind of fascinating to know that, you know, she had managed to make influencing a thing before it was a thing.
Yes, I mean, he is very impressed with her numbers. They very casually throw their numbers backwards and forwards between them. And he admires her very much and he calls her an original. And we also learned that she was never picked up by any of the agencies that she pitched to and that she made her own career. So the more I see of Ellie, the more impressed I am.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like Ellie a lot. She's, you know, she's clearly smart. She understands her value, but she doesn't take herself too seriously. And she clearly has a fantastic personality because everybody in the house really likes her. I think often if you are a strong and successful woman, sometimes that can come across in a way that is not positive, and that's just a part of sexism and patriarchy and all of that stuff. But you don't see any of that with Ellie. People love her across the board. The entire cast is very positive about her, and I think that is fantastic to see. I also really was quite moved by the conversation they have at the table where Caitlin is talking about marriage and what marriage is and her marriage to Kris Jenner. And then we get this insight from Ellie about the fact that she's been with her partner for 13 years and they have deliberately chosen not to get married because the thought of having a wedding without both of their fathers who have passed is too hard to manage. And we get a really beautiful gesture here from one of the other housemates, Sarah.
Yes, and this is what Ellie said on her Instagram. For anyone who's lost a parent would truly understand what a small gesture like this means and how loved it makes you feel. Every girl should have her daddy walk her down the aisle. And unfortunately, when my dad took his life, it completely tore me apart and makes me feel very differently about the wedding day we always wanted. I am so grateful for meeting you, Caitlin Jenner, truly the warmest, sassiest, take no shit, amazing woman who's got such a kind heart. Because Caitlin Jenner at this moment offers to walk Ellie down the aisle.
It's lovely, isn't
it? I have to confess, I had a little tear.
Yeah, it's lovely. And you can see the other housemates are also very moved. I mean, Josh is quite visibly, you know, taken aback by this amazing and generous offer. And I think that's probably why Bruce was such a fantastic father. When he was a character on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, he was just so lovable because you could see he just understood young people and how to take them under his wing and how to sort of be a paternal figure for them. And I think you're seeing that carry over now as Caitlin, that, you know, the fact that all the housemates are constantly turning to Caitlin for support, divulging secrets, telling her things about themselves. I think that Caitlin slash Bruce has a very, very warm and loving and caring personality and wants to care and look out for other people.
Yes, I think that's true. Although I did have a moment when Caitlin first was going to speak, I thought perhaps she was going to say, perhaps your mother could walk you down the aisle. But no, it was this very generous offer to walk her down the aisle. So let's see if that happens. It could be quite extraordinary, but it is in the offer that the value of that relationship is. So whether it happens or not is kind of another thing altogether.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Now, in an awkward little sidebar here, Sarah, I believe we discussed last week that there was not going to be any Big Brother Uncut, no Big Brother X-rated, and yet we got a tiny, tiny little bit of it in this episode where we saw Danny in the control room doing something very X-rated.
It was incredibly X-rated.
With a skipping rope.
Big Brother was trolling us. We got a shot from behind of Danny standing but hunched over, making some interesting gestures in his crotchal area. Big Brother did say, "What are you doing?"
Oh, that was hilarious. This is why we love Danny.
Fantastic.
Right, so we get to the challenge. Prior to the challenge, this is the first time we're starting to see some real strategizing going on amongst castmates that are not Luke Tokey. So Ellie starts to try to rally her troops in the team of Hard Knocks to discuss who she might want to target from the generators if they are to win the challenge. And she decides she wants to target Tom because he's not fitting in with the rest of the cast and she feels his reasons for being in the house are perhaps not as genuine as the other housemates. And we also see the generators, mainly Luke and Caitlin, also discussing strategy of who they will target if they win the challenge.
Yes, it's interesting. Ellie says that she's going to put up Thomas and two well-liked people. So this is fantastic strategy. If Thomas is your target, then you want two well-liked people up with him to make that obvious. Spoiler alert, it's not actually what happens, but It's good. It's certainly good thinking.
Well, this is the same strategy Caitlin used in the previous episode. So seems to be a consistent theme with the way that they're choosing to do the nominations.
Absolutely. So it's a holding up boxes with your arms outstretched challenge. It's hard to describe, but basically you have a series of boxes and the team has to stack them horizontally off the ground with a person between each eight blocks. So you are pushing outward with your hands at shoulder height on these blocks, trying to make it from one post to another. It's actually incredibly difficult. Made my shoulders ache just looking at it. I don't like shoulder presses. I would be absolutely terrible at this challenge. I don't know how you'd go, Amy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Shoulders is always my worst thing. When I used to do body pump back in the noughties, when that was when that was a bit of a thing, Les Mills classes would be, I used to only have 1 kilogram on each thing on the bar for the shoulder stuff because it's too hard for me.
Yes, I'm with you.
Yeah, and particularly for that first person, the whole burden of that challenge is very much on the first person in the team who's standing up against the wall, because they essentially have to stand there for the whole time. Every time the team drops all the bricks and they have to restart again, it's that person who's taking all the physical strain of it. And it was interesting to me that on the one hand we have Bernie, not known for his physical prowess, just known as the nice guy, up against Josh, who earlier I think called himself, made some comment about welcome to the gun show and did a bit of flexing in the diary room. And Josh quit very quickly, whereas Bernie stayed there for the whole challenge.
Yes, it was, and it was interesting when the bricks did drop that those anchor people were not swapped out. Again, we see Caitlin working, you know, strategically with her team as to who is going to go when, constantly talking to them, constantly uplifting them, constantly encouraging them. It was really fantastic to see, but to no avail, as it's Ellie's team who wins.
Yeah. So actually, sorry, I have to correct you, Sarah. On the generators, we did actually see after Josh dropped out, Tom was there for the bulk of the challenge, but then towards the end, Tom ended up dropping out and Josh filled in, and Josh was the one who was there at the end where actually Hard Knocks won. But this is, this is a take on a challenge that we see in Survivor a lot, where there's, you know, teammates have to stand in a line and hold something between them just using sort of pressure of hands between them, and it's known to be a very, very tough challenge. So I think it was really, you know, props to Bernie. What an amazing physical feat to do that.
Well, he also figured out how to do it, because they started stacking the blocks quite low and he immediately said, no, it's got to be shoulder height. And in fact, the generators heard that and they did the same thing, that it was actually easier if the blocks are at shoulder height.
Yep, exactly. So because the Hard Knocks team wins, Ellie gets to nominate three housemates to go up for elimination, and she chooses Matt, Josh and Tom. Do you want to give us a bit of insight into why she nominates who she does, Sarah?
Well, I think she's going with her put Thomas up with two well-liked people. I think she sees that the boys, Josh and Matt and Dane, and perhaps she thinks Luke as well are close, that Caitlin likes and is, you know, in good with these young men. I think that Ellie just very straightforwardly is saying, here are three choices of which it is clear that you will choose one.
Yep. I think it's a very good idea, particularly to target Matt. I do think that thing of the two football players being together is problematic if you want to play a strategic game, and Ellie is certainly smart enough to understand that. I think one of the issues with Australian reality TV in general is this obsession with putting sports people on. Sports people who often have never watched the show, don't understand anything about social strategy, and who always vote in packs because they play team sports. That's part of their DNA, that's part of who they are, that's part of why they're successful, is being part of a team. So therefore, when you put them on an individual reality show, it's not interesting to watch because they vote in blocks. So I think splitting up those two football players was really a critical thing that needed to happen, because otherwise it could have become quite a snooze fest.
Well, although Dane did amuse me enormously in this episode, by referring to Jess not getting up, he said, "It shits me to tears." I thought, oh, there you go. You've earned your dollar this episode. but otherwise, yes, it is literally a block. And I think that there is a thought about, well, why would you get rid of us? We're big and strong. But the challenges are neither here nor there, really. I mean, in this case, we've had two team challenges, which, by the way, is now over. It won't be teams after this. So you could get an entire group immune. But it's not just strength. And I think that's where the sports people, and in this case, the two footballers, don't quite get the social strategy part of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like having football players, more than one football player in a show and a cast, often then results in this kind of brains versus brawn dynamic of, you know, they value certain types of physical attributes, they value certain types of masculinity. And so then you find that there are other players in the house who maybe you don't get to know as well. So I think the fact that, again, spoiler alert, Matt goes home at this juncture might mean that going forward we might actually get a little bit more from people like Josh and Bernie, who we've not really had any sense of what their personality is or who they are, or maybe some of the quirky, interesting things about them, because it feels a bit like until this point the dynamic of the boys is very much being set by Matt, who is very closely aligned to Dane, and that kind of then solidifies that kind of voting block of the boys.
Yeah, so interestingly now Luke recruits Josh.
Yes, and I feel like Josh, that's what I mean about, I feel like Josh, even though he is by career choice an influencer, is easily influenced. It feels to me like throughout this episode, you know, he's kind of talked into things by Luke, but I also felt watching it that he could just as easily have been talked the other way. I think maybe if Matt had fought harder and realised that he was actually under threat and had tried to kind of forcibly persuade Josh, I think he could potentially have done it. I felt like there was definitely some dynamics going on there of that Josh, you know, can be swayed in terms of the political dynamics of how he's going to vote. He's not necessarily formed his own mindset or clear direction of how he wants to direct his votes. And so, yeah, that was my impression.
I think that Matt, it never occurred to Matt for a moment, even a fleeting moment, it never occurred to him for a moment that he would leave the house, that he would be evicted. It just was not in his worldview. And I think, unfortunately, it's meant that he has been a little bit salty since his elimination. It was such a shock to him that anyone would even think about it. So he didn't scramble and he didn't try and get numbers and he didn't try and persuade anybody. He thought it was a done deal and he could rely on the mates in the house.
Yeah, absolutely. For anyone who's curious to find out, there is quite a bit of drama on Instagram. If you go to Matt's Instagram, where he makes some pretty bold statements about who he likes and doesn't like from the house. He certainly didn't appreciate anyone who threw votes in his direction. And part of the reason why I sort of got that impression that Josh maybe is not necessarily playing with any specific strategy is that a lot of the housemates have responded by saying, it's a game, it's not personal. You don't need to take it personally, nor do you need to give us personal insults. Whereas Josh actually apologises and says he wished he hadn't done it and, you know, he regrets voting him out. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. It very much takes me back to the early 2000s when reality TV first started, that thing of people not understanding that the whole point of reality TV is you start with a cast of many, but there's only one winner. So people have to be voted out. You have to play strategically. And you really shouldn't take it personally because it is not about you. In fact, if anything, you know, the current generation of our reality TV contestants typically take being voted out early as a sign of respect, that people see you as a threat and that they want to take you out because you're just too good for the game and can't be kept around. And so it's a shame that Matt is unable to see that. And to me, it's just another reason why we shouldn't be casting former football players, because they don't understand it. They are taking the game back to literally over 20 years ago And, you know, reality TV has moved on from then. If you're going to go on these shows and then be so upset, it really makes me wonder why you're on the show in the first place. I don't know what you thought was going to happen.
I think he thought the mates would keep him safe, his popularity would see him through. I think perhaps he didn't see the game of the game. And I am sorry that he is upset. But as his fellow cast have said to him, it is a game. And stop calling people names, perhaps. But yes, as you say, Josh did apologise. Matt said, I forgive you, even though you're a wanker. So that's the sort of language that's coming.
Yeah, it's pretty unnecessary.
Yeah,
and I think if anything, it kind of leaves a sour taste. Even if you do personally feel hurt, and I can totally understand that, you know, there's really no need in a public forum to be using those kind of personal insults. Just good game, you beat me. I did see somebody on social media said something about, is this the way you used to react every time you lost a match when you played footy?
Yes.
So it's a surprising reaction to see, you know, somebody having that kind of a meltdown. It's not something I think that we're typically used to if you watch a lot of reality TV anymore. It is very much something from the early 2000s that we used to see.
And that's true. I mean, we're very used to seeing football matches of whatever code finishing and there being, you know, handshaking between the teams. So, yes, but let's leave Matt in his... in his tanty box, and let's hope that he feels better soon. What we do get is some wonderful quick cuts of Luke recruiting Bernie, Jess, Tom, Josh. He is working his ass off and loving every minute of it, and we absolutely love going there with him. As we said before, they have passed and stood by and leant next to a, in case of emergency, break glass box. Luke, of course, is the one that decides to do that. And Big Brother says, you have released a new housemate.
And as the promo says, quite rightly, this is what reality TV dreams are made of. Luke and Danny together. I love this couple. I just think they're going to bring such fireworks, such shenanigans. They're going to be creeping all over the place. I'm expecting the full gamut of ridiculousness, like spy shacks and, you know, stealing food in the middle of the night and all this kind of crazy stuff that you would, you know, we've come to see from these two players. I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating to watch them stir things up because the rest of the cast at this stage is still so passive about the strategy. It's going to be really fun to see these two throwing these kind of social bombs into the mix.
Yes, I absolutely. And in fact, Luke was having a conversation with Josh prior to the releasing of Danny, explaining to him, it's fun to have someone to play with. I don't mind lying to almost everybody, but I like somebody to strategize with and play with. And I was thinking, Josh is not the person for that. Joshua will be a good soldier that you can tell what to do, but he is not going to be your strategy buddy. But meanwhile, because we know Danny's there and because we've heard Danny identify Luke, yep, he's the one for me. We've kind of been excitedly, oh, I can't wait till they meet. And they meet and it's basically everything that any of us could wish for, and Big Brother is certainly very, very happy. Danny is immune from the vote. However, he will be casting a vote. So this is very interesting.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that none of the other housemates seemed to really try to recruit Danny. Really, it seemed like the only person who approached him with any stretch at was Luke. And so he and Luke kind of aligned very quickly and I think have now become the new power couple.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the overall, across the three episodes, my takeaway is that I feel like next week what we're going to see is a shocked household, a house of people who can't believe that Matt was blindsided in the way that he was, are now going to sort of be hit by this Mack truck of the double duo of Luke and Danny playing together, causing problems, stirring things up, telling lies, getting people to think strategically in the way that they haven't before. And I am hoping this means that next week we'll see a very different game in terms of the social dynamics. One thing I wanted to ask you, Sarah, is do we ever get to find out who casts the votes where? I was able to deduce episode 2, but episode 3 was not clear to me who it was that actually voted for Josh.
Okay, so Matt goes out in a 6-3-1 here. The votes for Matt are Bernie, Danny, Imogene, Jess, Josh, and Luke. And we saw those recruitments happening, so I liked that. I liked that we could see why certain people voted certain places. Ellie, of course, was the nominating captain, so she didn't vote. The votes for Thomas were Caitlin, Dane, and Matt. They must have thought, oh, yes, this is what the house is doing, and no one had spoken to any of them. So good going on the 6 for keeping it from the 3. Thomas votes for Josh.
Oh.
I mean, he had to vote for someone.
Why was he not in on the map plan?
I think because perhaps, look, I don't know, but maybe Bernie and Luke felt, even though he had voted in the blind side the previous one, I think they felt more strongly about the 6 and felt that they had the numbers, they didn't need him.
Okay, sure.
So coming up on, I think you're absolutely right, these two are going to cause absolute shenanigans all over the place, and it's going to be completely brilliant. Channel 7's promos want us to be amazed by Thomas Markle writing another letter. What they don't realise is we couldn't care less. We want to see this duo, the boys, as Big Brother called them, having an absolute ball running through this house, and it'll be really interesting to see who goes with them, what the reaction of Dane and Caitlin will be to Matt's going. I think Caitlin did have a good relationship with Matt. I think she'll be shocked, but I would be surprised if she didn't meld back in with the group. As we've said before, she seems to be a very loving woman that people just respond to. She's not overtly affectionate or anything like that, but people just really like her energy. So I think she may do very well. I think Dane might, again, be shit to tears, as he was before, but perhaps multiplied by 2 in this case because of the blind side at all and because he's lost his power couple.
I think Ellie also, I think Ellie might start to step up a little bit after this in terms of being more aggressive with the strategy, using her relationships to persuade people to vote with her. I think this will be a bit of a wake-up call for her as well. I think she has a lot of potential to be quite the power player, so I'm hoping that this will shake her up enough to see some more gameplay.
We've got a little bit of time for a couple of questions. We did get some great questions on the RHIP Patreon Facebook page and on Twitter, but there are a couple that are particularly interesting. I think we can take a couple. One of them is from Alice Borelli, and I'm calling it the Borelli Breakdown. She asks, how would you divide players into tiers, playing well, playing okay, playing poorly, not playing at all? I mean, I think we've discussed that as we've gone along, but for me, the people playing well are Luke, Danny, who's only just started, and Ellie. Playing okay would be Bernie, Caitlin and Imogene for me. Playing poorly is Jessica. She's made a really bad misstep by not getting up. And not playing at all, Dane, Josh, Thomas and dear Matt, who has departed. What about for you?
I'm pretty similar. I actually would have put Matt as playing okay. He was sort of the leader of the boys. He was trying to rally the troops to get them to vote in a block. So I felt that he thought he was playing. He just did not read the hotel and did not realise that he was a target. I think had his spidey senses realised that he was a target, I actually think he would have seen some strategy come out of him, whereas I'm not necessarily convinced somebody like Dane or Josh is going, or Thomas, in fact, is going to step up in terms of the strategy side of things, I think. Not really sure why they're there, but I don't think that they necessarily understand kind of the level of scheming and plotting and pre-preparing that has to happen in order to win.
All right. I mean, I'll buy that. So we'll move him up to, well, he's gone now, but we'll be moving up to playing okay.
Mm.
And now Christy 0707 on Twitter had an interesting statement and then a question. There was just one person of colour cast this season in Omarosa who was American also, and sadly the first boot. And Chris asks, who are some Australian people of colour that you would have liked to see on the cast?
Yeah, that's something that very much stuck out to me. I'm obviously Chinese Australian, and so one of the first things I noticed, particularly in this age of CBS is now doing diversity casting, so they've committed to 50% cast people of colour. You can see that on the current season of Survivor. I believe there was a very strong alliance of people of African-American background on the last American Big Brother. And so it's quite a stark contrast when you come to Big Brother VIP in Australia to see it's so completely whitewashed. Even in terms of LGBTQI representation, there's only one person. And so it's pretty disappointing. So when I tried to think about who I would like to see on the show that would bring some diversity, of course, there are multiple people of colour in Australia who are very talented that I would love to see, but this is kind of my list of people that I felt might actually be likely to say yes, and would kind of bring an interesting, fun dynamic to the show. So certainly comedians, I think we could have done with a comedian on the show. That would be quite fun to have somebody whose profession is to be funny, to bring that extra level of humour. So maybe somebody like our Indigenous comedian Matt O'Kine, or a Sam Pang, Nazim Hussein, or even a Susie Yusof might have been. They might have been a good one or two different people to bring into the house to show some diversity. And then in terms of other personalities, there are people like, we've already seen Casey Donovan on Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, but she's certainly one who's very good for reality TV. But we've even got people like Yumi Stiles or Benjamin Law, Beverly Wang, or even the very controversial Yasmin Abdul-Mageed, who are people who are not afraid to speak their mind, who are not afraid to express an opinion, who, you know, like to get to know other people, who like to lean in and sort of talk out and flesh out controversial and interesting talking points. They would have all been really interesting people I would have loved to see in the house as well. So a good mix of Indigenous people as well as other people of colour and descent. What do you think, Sarah?
Oh, I love your list. I think that's fantastic. So I thought immediately of Uncle Jack Charles. He's a Jatjawarong man. He is a self-described serial pest. He's a member of the Stolen Generation. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's an actor. He's a writer. He's an activist. He is extremely good value, and he would also give us a bit more age diversity as well. I thought Nakia Lui also would be good. She's a Gamilaroi woman, a Torres Strait Islander. She's a writer and a comedian as well. One of her books is Black is the New White, which is very much worth anybody's time. And then I thought of other diversities. I thought we could have Julian Assange, who is neurodiverse. He's certainly used to being locked up in isolation, so perhaps we could bring that. And once I was on that track, I thought of Tara Moss, who's a Canadian-Australian writer. She's an ambulatory wheelchair user. She has a walking stick called Wolfie, and she's a disability activist. She's an ex-model, and she would have brought enormous value, not just because she's a person with disability, but because she's a very strong, older woman with opinions, which is what we love.
Yes, exactly. Yep. She's quite a stalwart on panel shows and talk shows in Australia. So, yes, she would fit right in.
Yes. And if anyone's interested, her books are also fantastic. Well, I think we have time just for some fashions on the field, certainly a best in ground. Best on ground. What were your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that we're not getting diversity in casting, but we are certainly getting diversity in clothing. You know, the women are literally coming dressed in ball gowns and the men are showing up in flip-flops and slides and tracksuits. So it's quite an unusual mix of clothes when you see them all together. I wanted to give some honourable mentions first. So an honourable mention to the Fluffy Slippers crew with their big fluffy slippers. Omi, Ellie and Imogen's got those hilarious Care Bear slippers that she's sort of shuffling around the house in. But for me, probably my top two were Omarosa in that gorgeous red carpet, black feather dress that she came in the very beginning. That was just stunning and would have been, you know, it would not have been any, it would, what am I trying to say? It would have fit very well on an Oscars red carpet, an Emmys red carpet. She could have worn that anywhere. It was beautiful.
An inaugural ball, perhaps?
Yes, that's right. But probably my favourite one was actually Ellie's dusty blue slinky maxi dress. So I couldn't figure out if this was like an evening dress or just her normal house dress, but it was gorgeous. It just such a simple, beautiful look. She's certainly got the body to carry it off. And, yeah, she just looks stunning. In general, Ellie looks stunning in everything she wears, probably why she is a model.
Yes, I wonder. Look, I had some honourable mentions. Bernie's entrance look in his dark navy suit and a shirt that had a pop of colour. But the only reason really he gets an honourable mention is he is the only one of the men to make any effort at any time, apart from another honourable mention, which was Josh shirtless in his interview with Fitzy and Whipper. Otherwise, Sonia every time looks amazing, but I have to say her first episode, Gold Lame and Black Gown, was just stunning. But my best on ground, also Ellie, was the pink and orange second eviction mini with the exaggerated sleeves. It was just absolutely fantastic. And there's something about her effortless wearing of these extraordinary outfits where you feel, oh, she just popped it on. Could be laundry day and she'd be in something quite wonderful. So I'm loving seeing the clothes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Anne of Green Gables would say, what girl doesn't love puffy sleeves? I mean, her outfits are stunning. And I think that very simple pixie cut she's got with the hair and then minimal accessories is just why often she just looks beautiful no matter what she's wearing.
Well, the last thing I'll ask you before we wrap up is who's going next?
Oh, I would be surprised if we're not going to see some backlash towards Luke after what's happened this week. I would imagine of all the weeks, this is a little bit like, say, a merge episode of Survivor in that it's quite hard to pick what's going to happen because this is the first time we've really shaken things up. Up until now, I don't think anyone has really thought strategically as they're voting. They're just voting. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens now. I think you're going to have some pretty unhappy players. I think that Boys Alliance has now blown up. So you have some free agents floating around in Dane and in Josh. And Tom, as you say, is also a free agent now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see certainly a serious number of votes going towards Luke for changing the dynamic and taking it from a kumbaya hotel into a strategy game.
Oh, that's a good call. I'm just going to say I'd be surprised if Jess lasts the week.
Yeah, that's a good prediction too.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, it's good to remind everybody that November's a great month to become a patron of RHAP. You get access to our weekly Survivor 41 Q&A shows, the Patron 5 for 5, and access to the community on Facebook and on Discord. Plus, there's a Survivor Trivia Night returning this month as a patron activity. And support shows like this and everything on RHAP, including this show that you're listening to right now, by becoming a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And what have you got going on at the moment, Amy?
So I just put out a new episode of Kids Pod, I think it was last week, which is my second time interviewing author Andy Griffiths. So if you have children or you're a teacher, or you enjoy children's books, Andy Griffiths and Terry Denton have just released yet another 13-story treehouse book. So we interview him about that on Kids Pod, which you can find on all your usual podcast places. And, Yeah, and then I've still got my books out there. So if you're looking for Christmas presents for kids, I've got three books, The Happy Mask, The Very Hungry Reader, and My Grandma is 100, which you can buy anywhere, but please support your local independent bookshop. What about you, Sarah?
Oh, if you care to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. So it's time to go. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Is that your new Lexus RX?
RX plug-in hybrid.
So it runs all electric?
Yeah, for short trips. And can switch to gas for long.
Wow. What does your range anxiety therapist say?
Dr. Feeney?
Uh-huh.
He says my RX cured me.
No more range anxiety therapy.
Nope.
Well, you're an inspiration to us all.
The best-selling Lexus RX lineup. Now with a plug-in hybrid. Click the banner to discover more. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.